Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner, Dave Pezzo. Money Matters is brought to you by Pezzo Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH & Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We're going to go ahead and replay that. And I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And blessed to be a part of your day, Kevin Miller in the morning. Weekday mornings, 5 to 9 on the weekends. Catch us whenever and, of course, online anytime at KIDOTalkRadio.com. You can catch us on Facebook and Twitter and the like. Coming up, our friend Dave Pezzo. We'll talk to him whenever he decides to roll in. You know how it is. These folks, they're big-time television personalities. He's at the Pezzo Center. On Facebook, on Twitter, and when we talk to Dave, we're going to take a look at a few issues where we have multi-state retailers are looking at coming into the Treasure Valley. And this is from our friends at the Idaho Business Review. Look, I subscribe to this. No, the Rudy Pooby Mamby Pamby radio station doesn't pay for my subscription. I pay for it out of my own pocket. I guess that's tax deductible. So we might as well get some use out of this. So also, apparently, another BlackRock coffee bar popping up. So we'll talk a little bit about coffee and retail when Mr. Pezzo decides to show. Oh, there he is. Hello, Dave. How
Hello.
Are you?
Hello.
Good to have you with us here.
It's
on
great to be here.
On KIDO Talk Radio. So
you're my favorite thing about Monday.
I don't know about that. You have.
I do.
It's either me or Maggie O'Mara. And if I were picking, and I love myself, I would go with Maggie.
Well, but see, but I only get Maggie for like 2 minutes.
Yes, I know.
I get you for 30.
It's quantity versus quality. Take your pick on that one. Now, that cold is going around here, apparently.
Yes. Well, apparently it's, hopefully it's running its last in my body, and hopefully you've avoided it.
Well, that's what happens when you play golf and it's raining on Saturday.
Yeah.
There are people out actually playing golf in the rain on Saturday.
I've heard it was good for you to be outside and, you know, getting exercise. But
yes, exactly. So let's delve right into this here, because I thought of you. So I thought so much of this, I brought this in. A third Oregon coffee chain.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we always want to give proper attribution from the Business Review. A third Oregon coffee chain has started pouring its brew into the Treasure Valley. Portland-based BlackRock Coffee. They were on Chinden over yonder past 10 Mile over by the Fred Meyer. West of Meridian, still in Meridian, so just to let you know. They've got one on Broadway. They're going to build another one. So you've got the invasion of the Oregon coffee companies. You've got the Human Bean. I guess they're headquartered out of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got BlackRock. And now, and also you have Dutch Brothers. So are we, you know, when people ask me to describe the Treasure Valley, I say we have churches, gyms, and coffee.
That's, well, yes, we do.
Is there ever too many coffee? Are there too many coffee places, or can this BlackRock come in? And they've done some work with some of our sister stations here at the broadcast center, and people seem to love the coffee. They love the owners and such. Can they make a name for themselves? Considering we used to have Moxie Java before that franchise kind of
sure.
blew up.
Uh-huh.
Your thoughts? You like coffee?
I do like coffee, but I'm not a coffee shop guy, so. I don't hang at the coffee shop. I like my. I've gotten that benefit here of this radio station, free coffee.
You actually like to work in your office. I'm amazed, and I think Starbucks started this phrase where you have people that go in with their computers.
They do.
They might get a cup of coffee. They might get some water, and they spend the day surfing off the Wi-Fi and actually doing business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, you didn't. These are chains that you're talking about. Lots of them are little coffee shops that pop up. Just have one or two. Kevin, obviously they come and go. And you just mentioned Moxie Java leaving. But if you think of the presence of a Dutch Brothers in town, and they were right next to every school because it's, you know, perfectly good crack for kids. And at $5 a cup, they're really raking it in. They are. But it requires that kind of a mindset where people are just going to go in and buy some kind of a coffee-flavored milkshake and spend that kind of money. And most people are too busy out doing it. So I think they come and go. I don't think this is a story of ever-riding success higher and higher with $5 cups of coffee.
See, I think it's an invasion.
An invasion?
From California, now from Oregon, where you have
it was people, like a leftist invasion?
Yes, leftist and a coffee invasion. Take your pick. But there are some good conservatives from California, and gosh, I know if I lived in Oregon, I would be fleeing as well. However, again, it's a sign that the economy is booming, that they have all these coffee shops coming in. Also, you take a look at your beloved Treasure Valley, that you've lived here for years and years and years, albeit you are very Boise-centric, which we do cover, much to my chagrin. The overall growth, even the city of Boise looking to acquire more land to boom its population.
Yeah, and they will, and it's going to keep growing. People are coming here in droves. So the answer is yes. It doesn't surprise me. We're seeing more retail, and we're seeing what already is working with some. They're going to pick up more competitors out there. But there's no question that, there are some very, very well-run chains here, like Dutch Brothers, that they're coming up against. So this isn't, it's not exactly gladiators fighting to the death, but that's what retail is. It's if you're out there winning a dollar, somebody else is losing at least most of that.
I don't know about that. I would say the coffee people are very, very, very competitive. Let's move on, though.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these national chains coming in, and once again, from the Business Review, they point out Panera. Boise waited more than 20 years for Trader Joe's to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got a Trader Joe's. You've got not one, not two, but possibly three Paneras coming up. And as I said to Mrs. Miller, I go, once you try this Panera Bread place, it's very, very good. You've got one on Eagle Road. You've got a couple other in Boise, one in Boise, one being built in Boise. You've got Chick-fil-A coming in. I believe there'll be one in Nampa very soon. One in Meridian, one in Boise, one at the college, and then hopefully one in Nampa. You've got Lolly and Pops. They opened in 2012. I'm sure that's one of your favorite places at the mall.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine what that is. It's a candy store. But you have a CVS now coming in. They're in 49 states. So what do you make of not only people but national chains discovering the Treasure Valley?
Well, they've discovered it, as you know, Kevin. You and I, when you first got here years ago. Excuse me.
You know, I can continue to cover if you'd like to cough some more.
I'll try not to.
No, it's okay. Look, I cough all the time. I welcome a little humanity from you. By the way, I have to ask
you. A little humanity.
I have to ask you a question.
Yes.
And please don't be offended by this.
Oh.
Now, you shop, right? Or do you have a personal shopper?
I do. I'm a very poor shopper, but I do shop.
See,
yes, I don't have a personal.
When I go to the grocery store, I think of myself, I don't think that Dave Petzl would ever do this. But you know something? Thank you, brother, for being like us out shopping.
Yeah.
When you go to the grocery store and stuff.
Yeah, I really don't have people do that.
This is why I have you here, to give me some knowledge, because I thought you had, like, you know, a cadre of folks that, you know, you tell them you want your grape upon, that sort of thing.
I never have to leave the couch.
Right, which is a life I aspire to. So back to this, all these national chains coming in, and we've seen, unfortunately, a lot of local institutions suffer the consequences of these folks coming
in. They do, and they will continue to do it. It's creative destruction. Unfortunately, what you wind up happening, and I don't know if you've seen the movie The Founder, right, about McDonald's?
No, I've seen it three times.
Only three times. Very good.
Yes.
McDonald's ends up killing the people that – the McDonald's.
Right. Do you know why I've seen it three times?
I don't know.
Because I bought it on Amazon Prime at $14.99. So if I went to the movies, I would have only got a return on the investment once.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've watched it three times, now I've cut my cost, see?
You really have. You've down to like $5 a
movie. Right. And I'm going to watch it again.
Oh, and it just keep slashing that cost.
This is why we have these Monday segments, so I can learn about how to, you know, get that ROI.
Exactly. What a great return. Time. Forget about the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Time.
Or your own personal joy.
Hey, watching Michael Keaton, and you bring up a great point, the difference between Ray Kroc and the McDonald's brothers.
Right, and the point there is the franchisees know exactly what they're doing, and they have a cookie-cutter approach to it. And even though these brothers were the ones that invented the how to make the hamburgers quickly and how to turn it quickly and the quality control they had, They could only do it one store. And then when McDonald's comes in and everybody sees it and wants to be part of that, we see what the franchisees do. They even kill the original founders.
Ray Kroc kills the McDonald's brothers.
Correct.
And then swindles them out of money at the end.
Apparently so.
Yeah, yeah. That that was, you know, I've read a couple stories and even the biography of that. A fascinating movie. I do recommend that you watch it. My wife, Mrs. Miller, will not eat McDonald's again after that.
Really?
She does not support after what Ray Kroc did to the McDonald's brothers. But, you know, and here's something else. What does it take to make it in business? Mm-hmm. Ray Kroc, when he saw this, played by Michael Keaton, he had these guys that were at the golf course. It was kind of a passive investment.
Yep.
So what did he do when he saw other folks? He wanted people like himself that were hungry, the owner operator, if you will.
Exactly. And again, if you think about that with the Chick-fil-A, you know, how profitable each one is, and they don't let him own a zillion of them.
Right.
It's one of the magic pieces of it, where you have a franchisee who's taking ownership, getting rich, or getting poor if they don't succeed, and coming in and focusing on one or two or five different units instead of the entire company. It's a really brilliant format, and of course Ray Kroc was one of the original founders of franchises. So.
Well, and when you go back to Chick-fil-A, one of the most affordable franchises to get into. From a perspective, you don't have to have millions of dollars to do that. They really like that sweat equity.
They do,
which pays off.
It does, and the finding those right owners, and they are lined up because, let's face it, this is a highly successful chain, and the people that run it end up doing very, very well. Chick-fil-A does well as a company, but so do all the individual owners, and so people are just lined up. I want a store. I want a store. I want a store. And they're very, very selective in it. So it's a really good franchise.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you legitimately have to be an employee for so long. Outback Steakhouse has the same program that if you're a manager, eventually they'll give you a store. It makes sense for them because I believe most of these folks finance the operators themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making money like hand over fist, which is where Dave Pezzo is. We're talking news about your money at 580-5436. 580-KIDO. What's the big story this week coming up, do you think?
The big story right now is lack of volatility in the market.
Well, come on now.
Complacency.
On. That's not a good tease.
Well,
that's not a good tease.
When you think about what's going on out there with the problems in the Middle East, mm-hmm. Donald Trump's problems with the FBI and so on, and you have the UK elections, and we are at low levels of volatility. That's a story, Kevin, and I know it's not an exciting tease, but the reality is this market is shaking off everything coming at it. Now, we will obviously have market corrections, and a lot of people see that as complacency. I see it as market strength, frankly. It's a very, very strong market that refuses to give up.
All right. Will the strong market mean the end of retail? What does that mean for us? We'll talk about it next with Dave Pezzo, Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo, KIDO.
And don't forget Dave Ramsey on the cover of this month's Success Magazine, which is what we're talking about with our great friend Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, on Twitter, on Facebook. So Jim Rogers, I was trying to, because I was going back and forth, and you go, oh, he's a legendary investor. I'm always looking to take this segment to the next level.
Yeah.
Went on CNBC and said, hey, this is going to be the biggest crash ever. Not to echo what Terry, formerly of State College, Pennsylvania, has said repeatedly to you for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Rogers telling the guy on CNBC it's going to be the worst recession in his lifetime. And the guy on CNBC was... not a young man.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well,
because we have one every 4, 5, 7, 8 years.
That we have a recession and we have a bear market, yes. I don't know about the worst one. I know we will continue to have bear markets. We'll continue to have recessions. But the worst of my lifetime, that's quite a prediction. It's also quite a prediction that Mr. Rogers made about spiraling inflation out of control. that commodities would spike, and he was wrong about that. So all great investors are wrong. But I also find that great investors that are pronounce the biggest, worst, oh my gosh, this is going to be catastrophic type of announcements, I'm not sure why they do that, because he certainly has been a good, done well in his lifetime investing, but he's certainly been wrong for the last quite a while. And perhaps he just being louder, I don't know why. I'm not sure why he would be coming in and trying to be louder and more brazen about his forecast than ever. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I'm concerned here. I think that prices are too high. It's been a long time since we had a bear market. I can certainly get my mind wrapped around that more than this is the most catastrophic. It's going to be the worst of my lifetime. Not sure why. And I'm not sure what he cited in it as to the reasons why.
Let's take a look at the budget. You deal with the budget at the Petso Center, Petso Financial, when you're dealing with just about everything. We all deal with budgets.
Sure. Yeah.
The federal government refuses to rein in spending and the like. And you and I have talked about this. We've covered the Greek situation. We've covered all these things. Everybody worries when or if the chicken is going to come home to roost in America.
Right.
And what does that mean for our future?
Right. And we're a long ways away from that, Kevin. But the problem really is when the deficit gets so high, or we get so entrenched with every program can't be cut, nothing can be cut ever, then we do reach a point where we cannot come back from it. Because of the demographics of an aging society and people living a long, long time past age 65, the idea that Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are going to be viable is laughable. We are trillions of dollars in debt on those, and they have to be dealt with. And so that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about an impending debt time bomb right now. We're talking about a debt time bomb in a decade or two down the road. When all of this comes together, if we don't start now, it makes that change very, very difficult, and in my mind, highly unlikely.
Yeah, haven't we said the same about Social Security and other entitlement programs?
We have, and we still are.
Right.
Okay. So some of the changes made back by Reagan saved it, right? So they raised the some of the caps. They made some changes there. That's important. I think we need to do that again to Social Security. Fundamentally, people need to push that back. People are living too long. We can't allow people to retire at age 62. That's laughable. That's silly. It's way too young.
And back to Dave Petso, when we talk about people retiring at 62,
mm-hmm.
There's an issue that is going on throughout the country. I don't believe that it's here in the state of Idaho, but you have states with bigger legacy costs, primarily in the Midwest, maybe the Northeast, where you have these pension funds that are underfunded. I remember when I worked in the city of Pittsburgh, actually, it was 21% the pension fund was funded.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
But,
yeah.
The state that influences us the most, California, you have a lot of folks that, and I hear this all the time from people that are angry.
Yeah.
That people retire at 50 in California.
They do.
They max out their pensions. So it's based on, I guess, the last two or three years, whatever.
That's right. The
overtime. And then they get another job.
Mm-hmm.
And can the system afford this? And let me play this issue, because I never got the state job. I never did that type of approach. These folks did everything the right way.
Right.
They have found an issue with the system. Why shouldn't they be allowed to make as much money that is owed to them as possible?
I agree. That's the whole point of the tax code, too. And the whole point there is that you find your deductions. That's not non-patriotic. That's the way the rules are. And you have every right to do it. They have every right to retire. We also have every right to change the laws and say it is absurd that you get to put in 30 years anywhere doing anything and retire for 50.
Well, but then which is odd, because if you're retiring, then why do you get another job? Why not just work at the same place?
It's true.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose? However, we do have a call. And this is Ron Paul Jim. I'm sorry, we've cut the budget for the headphones.
Okay.
So we're going to let Ron Paul Jim speak, and then you will reply, if that is okay with
you,
sir.
That's perfectly fine. Okay. You're in charge.
I wouldn't go that far. But thank you for that. Let's go to Ron Paul Jim on KIDO Talk Radio. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Who decided, in the federal government, what the age of retirement actually is? Because I believe when the program was initially created, the lifespan was average 63. So you couldn't even collect, or at least that would have been the prediction, is that no one would be able to collect, or very few, on Social Security, and would be able to. So basically it was just a hidden tax with a feel-good message, but it was basically taking money that they were expecting never to pay out. That's what, so, you know, the fact that they even placed an age on it, if you raise it, you're doing the same thing. You're hoping not to ever have to pay out, just like insurance companies, which are another scam. So I'll let you answer to that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Thank you, Ron Paul. Jim, go ahead, please.
Absolutely.
Dave.
Great points. And first of all, it was started with the idea, really, that we had no retirement in this country, and they needed to make room for younger workers, and people were just hanging on to jobs, and they weren't very productive because we used to work ourselves to death. But you're right. It was designed with – there were 30-some workers for every retiree. So for those very rare people that made it that long, because life expectancy was in the 50s at that time, it was designed to be basically an age 65 and then a cut in Social Security at age if you retired early at 62. We've had many attempts at revising Social Security. But remember, if you own your own plan, then the government can't lord that over you. And the government likes to lord things over you. They want power over you. And if you don't think that's true, you're not watching. But the liberals like to do that, and they don't allow you to have your own Social Security. And so the idea that they're trying to push it back so nobody collects it, that's not quite true. We're living happier, healthier, much longer lives. It's not that they're trying to say, okay, if you make it to 115, you're going to get your Social Security. We're just simply saying that 65 doesn't work when life expectancies are into the 90s post-retirement. It just doesn't work. The system can't take that. And so we do have to push that back because very fortunately, very blessed, that we have figured out a lot of the puzzles of longevity, and people are living much, much longer than they used to, and much healthier, much more capable of working to age 70, and we don't work so much with our backs as we do our brains, and that really allows people to stay in the workforce a lot longer. But remember, all the revisions we've tried under Bush to have your own carved-out 401k, which means you can retire at 60 if you want to. You can retire at 75. If you die, your family would inherit that. If you die now, you get nothing out of Social Security, nothing at all. And so anyway, these reformations of Social Security are ongoing. They're very necessary, but liberals will not allow it because it gives them no control over you. They lose their control, and that's what government, big government, is all about, is control.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
But back to this issue quickly, these pension funds. Okay, I put in my time. I should get my money.
Kevin, you should.
And the taxpayer should pay for
it. You played by the rules.
Right.
The problem is that what we have is we've got to deal with this going forward, because the reality is it was a pay for the vote, and that's what the politicians do, particularly the liberals, are appealing to unions, and that's who they're in bed with. So if you're in bed with unions and you have to keep pushing out public money to get the union vote, give them more benefits, give them earlier retirement, bigger retirements. That's what happens. And so you have the same people that are in bed with each other. Hey, we'll make sure we keep passing these pensions. So there are, to a degree, Kevin, this has gotten so out of hand that places like Illinois, places like California, they may have to cut back on the existing retirees.
What about California?
California. Didn't I just say California?
It said Illinois and something like that.
I thought I would say California, Illinois and California. Those are the two major ones. So whatever I said, I meant California.
Exactly. Dave Pezzo, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you do so on the phones at 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO. And, of course, also we're over at 107.5, whichever you get the best reception at. You know, it's amazing. I look at this the dull market, and it was dully down this week. I mean, it was just, ugh. I mean, ugh. But so much, and we're going to talk about this because obviously we've got a huge vested interest around here with Albertsons in what's going on in the food industry. What a major shift on Friday with Amazon buying Whole Foods. I mean, what a, wow. Retail world now further turned upside down by Amazon. But I look at this amazing market and how it just refuses, no matter what kind of bad news comes at it, it just refuses to go down. To go down substantially. I mean, we have a couple of down days or a down week, but nothing that is really moving. And it seems crazy with all the political turmoil, all the global turmoil, that we have such low volatility. It is amazing. And as we look, you look for, if you will, guidance in the market, right? And we don't worry too much about short-term movement. But you can't help but look at a market and also wonder, when we go through dull periods like this, what usually happens? Is the market turn and head south? Is it a bad thing that we kind of march sideways and have low volatile periods? What usually happens? And there's an old adage on Wall Street to not short a dull market, meaning don't bet it's going down when it's really dull. And it is so dull right now. It is terrible. It's nothing happening, right? But it feels icky. Doesn't it to you? Doesn't it feel heavy, if you will? Another Wall Street term, right? Heavy. It feels heavy. It just feels like it just doesn't really want to go up. And that, to me, is a resting period because you don't, okay, so you don't short a dull market, but it feels terrible. Why? And I don't, you don't have to figure out week to week what the market's going to do, as we preach the dead opposite of that all the time, have for years. But at the same time, again, what's going on out there now? Now, we don't know until we look back, because nothing is a rule that holds true every time. But when markets move sideways like this, they just kind of are resting. So we've had a big move up, and we're resting. We're got another term, consolidating the gains, just relaxing here. So there's nothing wrong with a sideways, dull period. It doesn't mean we don't get hit with news that we don't expect out of nowhere, and the market tanks. That's what markets do. They go up, and then they have periodic corrections. But right now, it's no reason to panic that we have a heavy market, a do-nothing market, that there isn't anything really big going on as we march through the end of the second quarter. What are we worried about? What is the market worried about? Well, the two main things that it's sitting on right now and waiting to see, I believe, is Trump's policy going to end up, are we going to be able to get any of that? Any of the pro-growth? Any tax reform? Is that going to get done? Is Obamacare going to finally get done? What kind of pro-growth, get out of the way of business, other than the obvious regulatory restraint that we are seeing right now? And D.C. is doing everything. Boy, hats off to this administration. Amazing job they're doing on the deregulation front. It's been astounding. But that's all they can do because everything else requires Congress. So will that happen is one thing the market's waiting on. Will that happen? Because if it doesn't happen, we're in this plow horse thing, this very slow growth economy, and we're stuck here. If government is allowed to continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger, it will continue to slow down the economy even more. So that's one thing we're kind of waiting on, right? And then we have the Federal Reserve wanting to get out of the way a little bit. You know, raise rates, get the balance sheet shrunk. And the market's digesting that a little bit, right? I mean, it's not worried about it, but it's a little bit of a digesting the idea that the punch bowl's being taken away, right? I don't think that's bad. I think it says the economy's strong enough to handle it. And I think it's positive to get that out of the way. But it's still a digestion problem. It still takes some time. So we're kind of working through these things. Corporate profits are playing catch up. We had a great quarter last time. We'll be starting into earnings here in a month or so in the second quarter and see what those numbers look like. So, again, we're just kind of in this period right now. We're waiting and seeing. And the market is resting. And that's kind of all there is when it comes to that. Now, we had a call last week about whether we should be doing active investing or index investing. So I'll talk about that in our education segment, the beginning of the next hour, okay? So we'll dive into that because it takes a good chunk of time to do that. Right now, we're going to take a quick break, and I hope to have you on the line at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO, on this gorgeous, gorgeous Saturday. It's amazing, isn't it? We made it. It looks like we made it, right? They're dialing back the river now. You know, the reservoirs are near capacity, but how much water there is up there, apparently they can handle. So astounding when you think about it. They were dumping the river like crazy in December. I mean, wow. Wow. I mean, can you imagine? That's one of those things. For me, it'd be like you're like sitting back and you're in retirement. You're one of the Army Corps of Engineers guys, you know, and you're like, you remember back that winter of 16-17, you know, when everybody was complaining about how high the water was in December and we barely got through, right? Because here we are in June. I mean, think about how much water has been released since December in the last 6 months, just gushing out that thing. And it's still really high, but they're dialing it back and made it. And all the predictions of doom and gloom and flooding and everything. What an incredible job, really. Hats off to them. I just can imagine them sitting around going, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. And they should, right? Really cool. But we pulled it off somehow, and the flooding is not going to be anywhere near as bad. You know, it's funny how negative the news is. It's astounding. It's always negative all the time. And when we talk about that, why is that so important to investing? Because people are always trying to guess what the next normal correction is. Right? Well, you know, and again, and it's our the way our analytical brain works. And so we try to add up all the data points, you know, hey, this is wrong and this is wrong and this is wrong. But when we always look at what's wrong, don't you think we kind of get overwhelmed with what's wrong and not balanced? It's not that it's balanced to only look at what's right. But if all we ever do is focus on the negative data points, no wonder bears are always bears. You can always find some reason to not like the market. You can always find some reason that the economy is going to be weak or showing signs. And we had several of those last week. Retail sales dropped. Okay. But they're still up year over year. A lot. Strongly up. You know, and the constant talk about the death of retail. It's not the death of retail. It's the death of the way we buy stuff. Malls are dying. That's different. That's not death. It's a change. Retail sales overall have been rising. Just not this month. But if all we do is we look for data points as to what's wrong, and then the Fed hikes, or whatever it is. If it's always seen as the Fed is hiking, and now we're all going to die, which has, of course, been preached for since the Fed got involved in 2008. As soon as they leave, we're all done. That's been the constant mantra. But if we don't balance that with the reason that they're gone is because the economy is strong enough on its own, then what do? We constantly are, again, negative. And we see the market wrong. Like, you have to know what it's doing directionally in the short run in order to make money. And you don't. We don't. You put it in, you stay in the game, you win. That's really what it is. The rest is noise to sell your eyeballs on watching business news. But it doesn't stop us from day to day making guesses. But these are the reasons why, in my mind, people like Shiller, who's obviously a very smart guy, have been so wrong for so long, is because they're looking at little data points. I hope he's not wrong now, because thanks a lot, after 10,000 Dow points, Shiller has now turned bullish. Boy, that's helpful. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the help. Missed the entire bull market run, and now we're going to shift. Hopefully, that doesn't mean the death of the market. But my point is Shiller and others were always looking at one or two negative data points and not a big picture. Now, I'm sure they'd phrase it differently, but when people go out and grab a data point like car loans spiking, right? That's a very common deduction, if you will, about what's going on with the economy. And so they'll cite that. So economists cite it all the time. This is a really big problem. Okay? Student loans, defaults exploding. Absolutely true. Those two taken by themselves and continue to be brought out and paraded, this is a terrible sign. Miss the point, on the other hand, that overall debt is down in our country. It's at a very low level. It hasn't spiked. So the amount of debt we have overall isn't bad. But there are a couple of data points. If we want to only look for what's wrong, we'll find it. Again, that's the part of the problem. We come in and we look for the data point of negativity, creating an unbalanced look. So, and also then to simplify, we put everybody in a category. They're always bearish. They're always permeables. That's it. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. If you're always looking for bad, then maybe you are always feeling bearish. But if you're trying to find balance, it doesn't mean that you're always just a Pollyanna optimist and not quite as smart as the really thoughtful, concerned bears. But it feels that way, doesn't it? They try to put people who are trying to find balance as market cheerleaders, if you will. Are they? Is that all they do? I don't think so. I think it's hard to find balance because over 90% of the news is negative. So we have to struggle to try to see, and through all of that negativity, what really is going on? Is it really that bad? Are we at 2 or 3 on the final? 2. All right. Thank you. Pardon me. I forgot to ask. My fault, because we still have to get a break in at the end of the show. So pardon my interruption there. Okay. So if we are always thinking of people who are trying to find a balanced look at things as just Pollyannish, then it makes it easier for us to bury ourselves in the negativity and continue to tell ourselves how smart we are, how we really are looking at the big picture when we're not. We're looking at the little pictures of what's wrong. And that's okay to see what's wrong. but we've got to put it in the proper context. And when 90% of the news coming at us is negative, 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 I think you always have to go automatically stop and say, I don't know if it's that bad. Let me turn it over. Take that coin. Look at the other side. Really mull it over. Because here's the other overall reality. The optimists always win. Always. Now, that's crazy. It's crazy. But in the long run, we solve our problems. We move on to a whole new set of problems. But the things we're worried about today are not going to be the things we're worried about tomorrow, because these things will come and go. And they may cause corrections. But markets don't go to zero. But we've got to stop thinking of it that way. Like, you've got to get in and get out at just the right time. And you don't. So again, overriding all of this is this general picture and general question. Is the world growing? Yeah, it is. Oh, could it grow faster? See, this is where people get caught up. It's not growing fast enough and the policies are all bad. Are we growing? Yes. Okay. Good. We're growing. So what does that mean to corporate profits, dividends, cash flows? They're going up. Maybe it could be faster. Maybe there's impediments of government policy, bad policy, that we need to reduce. Yes. But if we're growing, as we have, forever, then the markets do well. We'll be back for hour number two.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and of course, these are my opinions only. They're not this station, they're not broker dealers, they're just, this is it. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, and sell, or go try to convince you that what you really need is something that has market participation with no risk at all. Okay. So, if we've got no risk in it, is that real? Do we get market returns? Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. So we're here not to guide you down those paths. And not to tell you it's all going to be okay or what direction the market's going to go. We don't know. We don't know. Nobody does. Nobody ever has. Not with any consistency. Like we talked about in the first hour, the market seems heavy right now. Does that mean we go and should short it? No, because our feelings and markets change dynamics very quickly. I don't know what's going to happen to throw the market into its next certain to occur correction. Don't know. Don't know at what level that happens. We don't know. How can we know? We don't. But we search and search and search and search all the time, don't we? We're always searching for why or what. What's the market going to do next? Maybe if I just watch a little bit more TV. No. Maybe if I just, put more data points together, I read a little deeper into the blog. No, probably not. Not more insight. At all. Most of the time, when we're digging in and just getting more and more data points, all we're doing is confirming what we already believe. It's good or it's bad, and we're all going to die. And so here's the data points to prove that we're all going to die. And that is helpful. How? It's not. It keeps us out of the market. And so, no, we're not here to be Pollyannas and talk about it. We're trying to take in the bigger picture. Is the world growing? Yes or no? Are areas of the market cheap or dear? Not an all or none decision, just maybe we should be looking and weighing a little heavier in one area or a little less in another. Maybe. But that's the big picture. It's not, is the market going to crack tomorrow? And yippee-ki-yay, I'm finally right, like a stopped watch. Good. The economy's dying. I'm right. It's so weird, but it is so weird. People get so stuck in their opinion and needing to be right that they're looking forward to finally being vindicated with a market meltdown. It's kind of weird. Super weird. Super sad for those folks to just live in that world. But when we think about the growth and how companies are reinventing themselves, increasing dividends, cash flows, figuring out how to be more profitable, starting up new businesses, killing off old ones, all of that creative destruction brings about a better lifestyle for all of us. We're wealthier. And sometimes it's hard with all the negative noise to actually see how wonderful things are. It really is. Really can be. All right, let's take a call here, and then we're going to talk a little bit about active investing versus passive. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks morning. For calling.
Good morning, Dave. How's it going?
Outstanding. What a beautiful day we got going on, huh?
Yes, and you're not playing golf, eh?
I will be later, yeah.
Have you heard of cell phones? I mean, you could do the show from the golf course, you know. Or maybe the 19th hole. That would be good.
Yeah, right.
Just going to make a quick comment on, you know, you made reference to that save money thing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of goes with insurance. And then people want, well, you know, they take the excitement out of life. They want boring, right?
Mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm.
want to insure themselves against everything. It's like emotions, you know. If you feel good, then chances are something will happen and you'll feel bad. But if you're flatlining your entire life, how boring could that be?
Well, that's an interesting point, Jim. I hadn't thought about that before. About it's not like you're going out and living on the edge. But if everything was certain or you thought it was, it would be boring. Nothing's going to surprise you.
Well, I mean, that's been my whole thing all through life. Of course, I never got married, settled down, did the establishment conventional thing. But, you know, I would go someplace without a job and look for a job. Most people, I mean, they wouldn't dare do anything. You know, they wouldn't change a job till they already had a job. And that takes the excitement out of life, I think.
So are you a gambler?
No. You know, gambling... Luckily, I'm not. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't, you know, I'm not addicted to smoking or coughing or gambling. And I don't like to gamble. And mm-hmm. I don't consider the stock market gambling. I invest,
yep.
But I do not gamble.
No, I hear you. It's not. It's actually not. We're the casino. The odds are heavily in our favor of winning every bet we make if we give it enough time.
And so, anyway, I would just, hopefully... The Trump train will continue on, and I mean it is so weird. And like you say, maybe the stock market's got so much stability,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, you know, I'll bet Vegas is taking bets on when Trump will hit the wall or whatever. You know,
well they've bet against him wrongly ever since he announced his run for president way over a year ago.
Well,
we all did.
I think it. You know, this is an extenuation of maybe Trump's apprentice program, but I'm, you know, I was born and raised many moons ago, and what, you know, the entire society that's happening today, to me, is surreal. It's virtual reality, you know?
Sure.
The whole thing. So, to me, Trump is just an extension of that, you know? I mean, everything else is bad, so why shouldn't Trump be, you know? Why shouldn't the president be, you know?
Well... I think it's time as a country, I wish the liberals would come around and actually be supportive of trying something different. We've done it this way, and we've got nothing but a stagnant, big, giant government that is sucking the life out of the private sector.
Well, you know, you were mentioning, you know, I mean, you love technology and expanding lifespans, and I meant to bring this up, and you know this, but, I mean, we can't afford to extend lifespans, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we technology can keep people alive till they're 100, but how can we afford it?
Right. I understand. That brings about a set of new problems. But these are good problems to have. People are alive and healthy. Now, do we want them in a vegetative state? Of course not. That then becomes the whole moral discussion of why do we keep people alive at all cost when they're not alive, right? You know,
right.
I mean, it's all of that. I get that. I totally get that. But my point here, Jim, is this. I'm 55 years old now, and I don't feel like 55, and I don't look like 55-year-olds did 50 years ago. It was old. When my grandparents were this age, they were old. And because life was so much harder, and it beat people up, and the environment wasn't as clean. I mean, all of the things that we take for granted now weren't there just a few decades ago. And that to me, it's just an amazingly great problem to have. Is that there's a really big possibility that I've got 40, maybe even 50 healthy years, not drooling on myself years. But maybe, not everybody, but maybe a lot of 55-year-olds out there are going to be around to be 100 and healthy.
But
that's
just
amazing.
Just so long as we can afford them. Assuming those people, well, they need something to do. I mean, you know, and I'm 71, and I don't feel 71, you know.
I know.
I feel young. It's just the propaganda I hear from everybody from AARP, you know, telling me my knees are going out and every part of my body's failing, you know?
Right.
And that I need to subscribe to somebody to pay some money to keep me going.
Well, you clearly need some more medications that you're not taking.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I tell my advisor I don't really want to invest in Pfizer or Merck, you know, these pill pushers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in health, not, you know, the whole thing's based on sick, you know, so.
Well, it is. All right, Jim, I got to roll.
Care.
Buddy, thanks for the call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDGO. Let's go to Betty. Betty, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding municipal bonds.
Okay.
I am an investor in Idaho municipal bonds.
Okay.
And have been for about 35 years and have a ladder of bonds. And what I'm trying to find out, I've never been able to. I questioned my buy through two brokerage firms and then also a firm that does nothing but municipal bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, never can find out what the commission is or what the fees are charged for buying those bonds. And I know when they come due, they're due at the price that I bought them.
Yeah, at par. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there's no problem there. But when they do come due, and my broker says, okay, I've got $25,000 up here now. Let's see. We can put them in. This is a bond,
mm-hmm.
Possibly this one or this one. But I say, what's the fee? What is their commission? Oh, it's built into the bond.
It is built into the bond. But still, they should tell you, right? You ask they still should tell you, but it is built into it. Here's what happens with the bond. You are buying it. You might buy it at 100. Let's just say you buy it at 100, which is par, right? It's going to come due for 100 someday. You buy it at 100.
Yes.
If you didn't have to pay the brokerage, you would have bought that bond at 98. You're paying them 2%, typically, 2 to 3%.
Is what it is. And then I've been told that you can say, okay, well, if it's at 100, you say, well, let's see if we can buy it at 98.
Right. Which means they bought it at 96.
Okay.
Are you following me?
Well, I am following you, but why is it? They never tell you What?
No.
They just say, oh, that's built into the bond.
Betty, they should. It is built into the bond, but they should tell you. You ask a very fair and a very direct question, and they flat didn't tell you. And they should tell you. Now, I'm not here to run them down, but you ask why. They just don't want you to, they don't want to say, on this $25,000 bond, I'm getting paid $500. They don't want to say that.
Okay.
Okay, and because you say, well, that seems like a lot. All I do is these come due, and then you roll them over into another one.
Yes.
Well, it is a lot. And
yeah.
You would get paid higher interest. That $500 comes out of your pocket. It does. Because you would be paid higher interest if you didn't, meaning,
sure.
Or you get higher principal later. If you buy it at 98 instead of 100, it will eventually mature at 100, and you make an extra 2%. Or that's been paid off to the brokerage. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be paid, but they certainly should disclose. One of the most terrible areas of the market, if you will, for disclosure is bonds. They don't have to show it there. And I don't know why. I really don't know why. We're in this huge rush, and you know, with Department of Labor rules, and we're all trying to figure out how we're going to take care of people that want to get started at $100 a month. I mean, it's a functional problem right now, and all because of a whole lot of disclosures that the Department of Labor is really concerned about, and rightfully on some of them because of all the stupid high commission annuities and things like that that are out there, and promising market returns with no risk and all these things. I mean, that's hokey. It's wrong. And I get where they're coming from, but it is and now over in bond world, though, Betty, you even asked them a direct question and they don't answer you. So
no,
it's a weird thing.
Oh, that's built into the bond, and they don't come up with, I'm buying the bond
at 98 from the issuer, and we are repackaging it to you at 100. And you say, oh, okay, that's the way it works. And it is the way it works. But if you're dealing with large amounts, it might be 1%. And that's why, Betty, I always in the bond world for diversification, for pricing, and everything, I really like mutual funds and ongoing management. Now, if you're just going to go buy Idaho bonds, that's totally fine. And you've created a ladder, and you've been happy for 35 years. But one thing to be aware of, too, is that's basically in a fund. That's exactly what it is. Now, they're not Idaho bonds. There's just not enough of them to do a fund.
No.
They have one, but it's terrible. I wouldn't bother with that because the rates are so low. But it's okay. I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong. I'm just saying instead of that 2%, you're buying in millions of dollars directly from issuers is what these funds do. So they get better pricing, way better. And they should get better pricing when you're dealing with, if you don't have to market your $10 million bond for, sewer or something, and then an entire organization says, we'll take all of that, and they sprinkle it through five different funds that they have, it's a done deal. And that's great for the municipality. It's great for the investors because they get a higher return on the bond coupon. Okay? Okay. But anyway, yes, that's where the price is. So good question. And next time you can say, and that's also, you could turn around, you're buying it for 2% more than it was worth that very day. If you turned around to sell that bond, Betty, you couldn't get 100 for it. You'd only get 98. Okay?
So I should ask my source. I want to know what the commission is.
What the markup is.
What's the
markup on the bond? Are you guys taking 1, 2, 3 points? What are you doing? How much here?
And how about I buy it and I pay you 1?
And if that was the case, you'd buy that bond for 99. And if you're dealing with an organization that can do that, and I don't know that they can, then maybe I don't know why you don't ask that question. If you're just buying Idaho bonds, rolling them over, ask the question.
That's essentially what is happening in this fund for a number of years.
Exactly. For 35, I think you said. So, yeah,
right.
Absolutely. So there's nothing wrong with saying, no, I'd rather pay 99.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Betty. Good question. All right. Have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And we need to take a quick break here. Francis, hang on if you would, please. And hopefully you are getting ready to ring us up. We've got four lines available at 580-5436, 580 KIDO, or it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number here is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, of course, that's dave@petsofinancial.net. All right, let's go to Francis. Francis, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes. What would you recommend for an elderly parent who sold the house and just wants to make 1% in a CD? I have local CDs at the local banks are just the saddest return if you just want to go year to year because the parent's in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the online ones, like there's one, if you just type in best CD rates, Goldman Sachs, Sallie Mae, apparently have them that are insured. I don't know if those are safe. What would you advise?
They are. They are also. They're all just, all they're doing there is they're basically grabbing them from around the country. And I don't, I understand that you want to have the 1%. It depends to me how healthy people are. I know it's we're in our 90s, but you know what? Here in a week, 2 weeks, we're going to be celebrating one of our clients' 100th birthday. And it's not we're not visiting him in the nursing home, okay? We're going to go out and celebrate his amazing life out at the airport because he basically just a few years ago gave up his pilot license. I mean, this is so when we think of age now, and we really have to look at it and go, you know, mom's kind of healthy here. You know, she may go another 10 years. Do you really want to earn less than the inflation rate for the next 10 years? I don't think so. And so I do think we want to try to think in terms of, let's structure this out. Like, I want to make sure we've got money a year from now or two. But for that longer term, does it really matter if I'm just going to make up a number here, if that $100,000 is worth 98 or 103, if we're getting a return and then over the next few years it kind of comes due, it'll be worth the 100 you put in, but at least you can get 3 or 4%. You see, it's not like you're trying to stretch out and say, I want to put this at risk in the market, so to speak. It's just that you're going to get daily pricing risk, but we get much better returns. Go ahead.
So you would do a ladder of CDs?
I think not really a ladder of CDs because CD rates are so low. But there's nothing wrong in my mind with thinking if we have a year and out, why don't we use something like floating rate notes, short duration mutual funds as well, or even adjustable rate mortgage funds. These may move a penny or two, but rarely. And at least you're going to get somewhere between 1.5% and 4.5%. That's the interest rate that those are being paid. And so, and by having a whole fund of those kinds of things, you don't take the individual issue risk on. You have a whole diversified portfolio of banknotes. And so that is not guaranteed by the FDIC, but you have such broad diversification that it gives you that stability of pricing, and you don't want to go out and buy one note, of course. But having it structured in this way, when we think of, hey, wait a minute, what's wrong with dividend-paying stocks over the next 5 or 10 years? Why are we killing somebody off in the next 12 months? Would I want to own stocks of great global corporations that pay ever-increasing dividends as a basket and not risking on one company for the next 10 years? That, to me, is not a high-risk strategy unless I'm needing the money out in the next 1 to 3 years. Okay?
Got it, and I appreciate that. But if the parent won't do anything but a CD, the online ones are safe?
Yes, they are.
So
they are. I don't see any problem with
them. Go in there and apply online into the Goldman Sachs or the best rate I can find?
Find the best rate. It's going to be put into some custodial account. You can go into any brokerage firm. They all have they all shop CDs nationally as well.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah. Same thing. All
and
we would do is somebody.
Do they charge?
No. It's quotes built in. It's built into the rate. I don't. You know what I'm saying is that, for example, if you came in and opened up, we have a our custodian is TD Ameritrade. So if you they have CDs on there too. That's all priced in. I'm sure CD or TD has already negotiated that they're going to get paid a tiny bit of money to have that CD listed there, and the bank is paying you what it says it's paying, okay? If it's 2%, yeah, it's 2, okay? And that's 2 to you, and there isn't a cost to do it. It has already been negotiated before it gets there, and the custodian undoubtedly, although it's not disclosed, is making money on that exchange.
Of course.
Okay?
Of course.
But they aren't going to tell you what it is. It's not like the bond.
Okay.
I remember from the prior call, it's not like the bond situation we're talking about where it's a factual built-in number. They've negotiated something with the Bank of Illinois or whatever it is. Okay?
Gotcha. All right. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Francis. Have a good day.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We got to take a break here for Fox News. Jim, hang on. You're going to be up to bat next. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. And, of course, you can reach us all the time during the week at petzofinancial.com. We've got podcasts. We've got calculators. We've got articles there to help you with your own financial planning as well. So feel free to use that for your, getting you some information. It's a good place. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please. Jim, are you there?
Hello.
There you are.
Yeah, well, this isn't Jim. This is Ken, actually.
Oh, okay. That's all right. That's all right. Nah.
Well, I have a curiosity question today about the after-hours trading.
Yeah.
Is that where the futures market is determined, number one? And number two, who has access to it?
Okay.
And is there an advantage to having access to that market? In other words, do they get do they have ability to trade? They certainly have an ability to trade after the markets close. And is that an advantage over us who buy or sell at the closing price?
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a couple, three questions. I would be interested in your comments about it. I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio.
All right, Ken. But I also, if I don't get it all, then you call right back, okay? All right. So let's talk about after-hours trading. Great question. So number one question of that was, does that control the futures market? And the answer is no, it does not. Futures market is a completely separate market, and you're simply betting on a contract in the futures of the S&P 500, meaning they're just saying this is what represents the S&P, or this is what represents NASDAQ, and that trades as well in the futures market. And you can trade those. You can even trade oil or energy, corn, pork barrels, pork bellies. You got all of those things that you are in the futures market, okay? But the after-hours trading is a separate and different market where you're actually buying and trading individual stocks, although you could do the S&P as well through an ETF called the Spider. But that's not the futures market either. So that is a separate, and you have to have, in order to trade that, you have to be a licensed futures trader, okay? Separate. Can you and I access the after-hours market? The answer is yes, you sure can. Most all brokers do allow you to do it. It's a bad idea. Just stay away. It's something that people get a knee-jerk reaction for. You hear, in after-hours trading, Micron surges on, you know, earnings, crashes on bad earnings. Earnings were okay, but the outlook was bad during the conference call, and you see it. And then you can come back the next day, you're going, oh, my gosh, I better get out because you see the stock falling, right? So you trade out, And then you find out overnight, you know, people kind of look at it and go, that's this was a good earnings report. And you find out it's not down. So it opens up the next day. So don't worry about that. It's not really on to your next question, which is it an advantage to trade in that marketplace? And the answer is, not really. It can be if you are correct in your assessment. But do you have an inborn, if you will, advantage to be ready to push the trigger on Apple's earnings release? And the answer is no more than if they released it during the day. People will react, overreact, be completely incorrect in their reaction. Oh, that missed the numbers. And so they go, boom, push the button, sell. And so everybody's selling, right? Because the announcement came out and bam, I beat everybody else. Ha ha. And then you find out through the conference call, oh no. They were writing off a couple of other things, but they're announcing a super increase, a brand new product coming out this quarter, and the stock soars. And you had already pushed the button. No different, really, than making the announcement for earnings during market hours. But in order to try to give people time to digest the news, to listen to the conference call, they don't announce during trading hours. So that people are trading, doing their thing, and then when the market closes or before it opens, they say, here's our earnings announcement. And they do their conference call because people aren't trading at the time. So that's the reason why it moves around, and people do trade it in the after hours, but I've sure not heard of it being very successful for people. I just wouldn't worry about it, and there really is not an advantage. Okay? So, Ken, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. I'll tell you what we're going to do in order to try to, you know, get the right time frame here. Let's go ahead and take our break right now, and we have a clear board again. Love it. Give us a call, 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Plenty of time to call in today. I had talked about doing, you know, in our education segment, but we always prefer phone calls. So for those of you who are wanting to hear about or talk about active versus passive or index investing, this is an ongoing discussion. So this won't be the last time we talk about it, nor do we have anywhere near enough time left in today's program to talk about it. But I will touch on it a little bit. In spite of the fact that we have so many other things going on, if you will, in the news that I want to talk about, other than, you know, like the gay pride parade thing going on. Wow, I thought this was done like a week ago. I guess I just don't keep up on things. Don't care. It's so bizarre to me. It's just so weird. Everybody has a weird, you know, statement to make. I'm entitled to whatever. I'm oppressed. I'm an oppressed white guy. That's what I am. I'm an oppressed middle-aged white guy. And I need more rights and I need more this. And it's like, wow, who cares anymore? I don't care. It's just crazy. It's craziness to me. Anyway, that's it. I'm done with that. Let's talk about, like, the markets, like indexing versus not. It's not one way or the other. It's all wrong. I like the idea of a little of both. But one of the fundamental problems that I have is that when I look at one company, and I'm not going to say who it is because then I've got all the disclosure issues and I'm not trying to push everybody in there. I'm just saying one company that's been around for decades, one company, active management, every one of their funds, every one of them, not this one fund over here that was run by Peter Lynch. No, I'm talking about one fund, not one. A dozen different ones over decades with dozens of different managers.
So I don't even know who's managing it. It's because it's like a whole bunch of them. I don't know who managed it 20 years ago. It was a bunch of different ones than today. But somehow through that, they beat the market. By a lot. And they do it with less risk than the market. But did they beat the market last year? No. Well, that's it. We're done. And so this kind of overdone over some period. Well, you know, 70% of the managers underperform. Yeah, but 30 did outperform. And isn't it weird that sometimes they congregate as like the same 30 or 40 or 50% that do beat the market? It doesn't mean you can't have a little bit of representation in a broad market. But the idea that you're diversified by buying the S&P 500, it's not diversified. It's the giant giants. And by definition, you're buying more and more and more of that as it gets higher and higher. Not just of the market going higher, but if Amazon's doing really good and it takes a bigger and bigger part of the index, then you own more and more as it goes higher. So you're not buying low and selling high. You're buying high and hope it goes higher. It's okay, but understand what it is. It's the 50 monster companies are virtually the whole index. That's it, and all U.S. That's not diversified. What about the small caps? What about a tilt towards value when value beats growth in the long run with less risk? It just does. You're actually doing the opposite because you're buying the higher growth because it takes up more of the index. Again, it's not either or. I'm just saying buy a broader index than the S&P. Get the whole market if you want market participation. Get the whole thing. Again, I don't have a problem with some. I don't have a problem with ETFs, exchange-traded funds, where you kind of come in and go, you know, I really want to own more, make it up, energy. I want a little more technology. I really want artificial intelligence, high representation here. I want a piece there. There's nothing wrong with going and saying, I want 2% of my portfolio, in pushing it in that area. It's not a day trade. It's an investment. But that's what, to me, that blend is. And we'll talk about this much over the years, because we already have. But it's a big battle right now, and the way I see this battle is silly. It's like the lines are drawn in the sand. It's the red line. It's Obama's red line in Syria. You can't cross it. Yeah, you can. Yes, you can. And you can go both directions, and we can try to look at the data. But the idea that indexing always beats active investing is simply not true. It's academically not true. There are multiple fund groups. There's multiple managers out there that over long periods of time have clearly beaten the index. Clearly. And they still manage the money today. Don't we wish we would have all given our money to Warren Buffett? Even after Warren Buffett was really successful and it was really obvious he was really good, you didn't have to be with him day one and guess. All of the people that over the decades can look back and look at the data from this one fund group, every single one over the last very difficult 15 years, every one of their funds has beat the index by a lot. But you can't do that if you ask the academics. That's not possible. It's not only possible, it happened. Not with most of the funds, not with one or two good ones. Every single one beats the index. So is that case over? Done? No. It's just saying open up our eyes and our minds to the possibility that both work, active and passive, together can be fine. But the idea that we have to prove that one or the other is superior in all ways, in all times, is, again, back to the we can never lose idea, right? We can and we do and we're wrong and we change and we grow. And yeah, I know. And even the five-year-olds graduating from, you know, kindergarten get a trophy. I get all that. I get all that. And we've made this weird thought that we all have to have a super right answer and we can't all ever be wrong. And the answer is, yeah, we just need to consider both. Both. Active management gives you this amazing, when you stop and you think about it, is it really not possible in a market of tens of thousands of different securities traded every day that we don't have dislocations of price? We don't have true bargains? Does that make sense to anybody? That the market is completely efficient? It's efficient in the morning. It can open down 200 points and it can be up by the end of the day. That's efficient? That's stupid. But it's also stupid good opportunity. So if you're looking at and you've analyzed and you think that the very best engine maker is General Electric, and you don't want to own the competitors, I think that that's a wise decision. And it really does pay off. It seems to pay off over long periods of time. So it's not an academic question. Can you beat the market? Does it make sense to have money managed in both directions based on your goals? Does it make sense? When we think about what managers do, learning so much about different industries over long periods of time, no wonder some companies, some managers, some analysts really do have an edge. They're experts in their area. They really do get, say, the chip business. They really get who Micron's big competitors are. Or maybe they get the automobile industry. How close or how far is Ford or General Motors from doing something in electric cars? Something to compete against the Teslas of the world. They can. They can learn enough to be experts. So we shouldn't shut out either one. And we'll talk more about this next week. But right now, I got to get out of here. Go whack a golf ball. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy this beautiful weather.